This is our third week on the Journey to Emmaus. The Journey to Emmaus is a resurrection story found in the Gospel of Luke. The Gospel of Luke is one of four biographies of Jesus found in the New Testament. The story of Emmaus, the Journey to Emmaus, is when Jesus meets two of his disciples, and these two disciples leave on Easter morning from Jerusalem, where all this craziness is going on, and they decide it's time to go home, back to Emmaus, their hometown. And so they embark on that journey to the village. And just to remind you, the story's still on Easter Sunday. We're now 3 weeks past Easter, but the story's still at Easter Sunday, and a lot has happened in those few days around Easter. Jesus has been arrested. He was accused of fomenting rebellion against the authorities. He suffered a sham trial. He was shunted off to the Romans as the civil authority, who ultimately found him guilty, and then they crucified him. And Jesus' dead body was taken down from the cross and buried in a tomb. And on the Sunday morning, a group of his women disciples go to the tomb intending to prepare Jesus' body for burial, but they found when they got there that the stone to the tomb had been rolled back, and they looked into the tomb and they discovered that Jesus' body was missing. And they were debating to themselves what this all meant when two angelic visitors came to them and told them that Jesus was not to be found among the dead, but that he was alive. And the women, they run back to the disciples. They go back to the other disciples, and they say to these disciples what had happened to them. The empty tomb, the visit of the angels, and their report back is determined as fanciful nonsense. And yet something twigged in Peter, because he decides to go down and investigate, and he discovers things exactly as the women described it. And it's at this very moment that the two disciples from Emmaus decide to go home. And as mentioned to the last week, it's a kind of strange moment to decide to go back home with all the craziness going on. But I suppose their thinking was pretty simple. It was that Jesus was dead, and dead people stayed dead. And so whatever else was happening, nothing changes this basic fact. And as has been mentioned, in the ancient days, when you had a Messiah and he died, you had two choices. You could either go and look for another Messiah, or you could go home. And the disciples to Emmaus decide that they're going to go home. There's no point sticking around here anymore. But interestingly, as they embark on their journey to go home, and it's about 11 or 12 kilometer walk from Jerusalem back to Emmaus, who should come beside them but Jesus? But they can't see him for some reason or another. They don't pick up on it that it's the Lord walking with them. And so the three of them get into this conversation about the events that happened on Thursday and then Good Friday and then on Easter Sunday. And the big stumbling block for these two disciples is that they believed that Jesus was the Messiah. They believed it passionately, yet Jesus died, which means he couldn't have been the Messiah, because Messiah can't die. And they made a really simple deductive argument. And I have a slide up there if you can find it. A simple deductive argument. There it is. It's based on two premises. Premise one, Messiah cannot die. Premise two, Jesus is dead. Conclusion, Jesus cannot have been the Messiah. It's like any other deductive argument. If the premises are true, the conclusion must be correct. For instance, I have another slide there, Liz, about fruit. All fruit has seeds. That's premise one. Premise two, apples are a type of fruit. Therefore, the conclusion must be that apples have seeds. You use that kind of logic all the time, every day. Young and old, you all use that logic. The two disciples had this basic confirmation bias about how this is supposed to work, based on this simple deductive argument that they had. And none of the new data from Sunday morning had made a dent in their thinking about the situation. You'd wonder what kind of data it would take for them to see or learn something new about the circumstances they found themselves in. What would change their mind about Jesus now, about him being Messiah? And you might say, well, if they saw him raised from the dead, surely that would change their mind. No, it wouldn't. He's right there walking with them on the way to Emmaus, and yet nothing changes. The new data that could change their mind about Jesus, about him being Messiah, about life, death, and resurrection is right before them, is right in front of them, is walking right beside them, but they can't recognize this new data because their confirmation bias is too strong, and so they can't make out Jesus. Confirmation bias is simply sifting out everything that doesn't agree with what we already think. It's a very powerful reality in people's lives today. We tend to look around for that which confirms what we already believe. You know, some people have offered explanations about why those two disciples cannot see Jesus. Maybe he had a hoodie on, and they couldn't see him like Alexis does over there. They couldn't quite make out his face. Or maybe he just looked a little different in his resurrection body, and that kind of confused them a bit. Or maybe God put his hands over their eyes in a certain kind of way so that they couldn't see the Lord. But remember, confirmation bias is about excluding information that doesn't already confirm what we want to believe, doesn't fit into our pre-existing beliefs. And the disciples believe that Jesus is dead, which means he can't be Messiah. And they sift out any data right in front of them that would disturb their viewpoint. Now you may say, well, that's not possible. How could they not see Jesus? But I think we get mesmerized by our pre-existing beliefs, whatever they are, to the point that we can't assimilate new information. We just can't see it. And there's Jesus right in front of the disciples, and they can't see him. They see him, of course, but they can't make sense of who it is who walks with them. In the story of the journey to Emmaus, we've gotten to the point where Jesus intercedes with his two disciples. He says, how foolish you are. He says, how slow you are to believe that all the prophets have spoken. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter into his glory? And then Jesus goes through the scriptures and explains it all to them. And I would have loved to have been a little fly on one of their hoodies as they walked along, so I could listen to Jesus explain the scriptures to them. Must have taken them like 3 hours, 4 hours to walk from Jerusalem to Emmaus. And imagine that conversation as Jesus goes through the Torah, the books of Moses, goes through the prophets. And what Jesus is doing in that conversation with them is challenging one of the premises of their deductive argument that the two disciples were making to themselves. Remember, the premise one, Messiah cannot die. Premise two, Jesus is dead. Therefore, the conclusion is Jesus cannot have been Messiah. And Jesus informs them, tells them that in fact Messiah must die. That not only can Messiah die, but he must die. This is an essential part of the journey that Messiah die. It was a key feature of his mission that he die before he entered into his glory. Which means that Jesus' death, rather than being an impediment, an obstacle to his being Messiah, is the very basis for it. And Jesus goes over this ground with them for hours as they walk along again and again and again. And surely, slowly but surely, the data starts to seep into their minds. And their confirmation bias is slowly being chipped away at. And they finally get to Emmaus, 11 or 12 kilometers journey, and it looks like Jesus is just going to keep walking, but they invite him to come and share hospitality with them in their home. They entreat him to come to them and stay with them. And I think they want Jesus to stay with them for more than practical reasons. They are excited in some powerful way with what he's sharing with them. They sense they're on the verge of something very important. They want him to stay because they don't want to lose this moment, even if they don't fully understand it yet. The data around Jesus and his resurrection is about to break through. The disciples' deductive argument about Messiah is fraying. Messiah, premise one, Messiah must die. Premise two, Jesus is dead. The conclusion is Jesus may be the Messiah. Jesus has spent 3 or 4 hours proving that their premise one was incorrect. Messiah must die. And now Jesus is going to, next week, as we look further, he's going to challenge premise two of the disciples thinking about the Messiah. Because see, premise two is Jesus is dead. But actually, he's not dead. He's alive right beside those two people who are walking, his two disciples who are walking back to Emmaus. He's alive right in front of them. He was dead, but he's not dead anymore. And we'll see this unfold over the next week, how Jesus transforms premise two. Jesus is dead now into Jesus is alive. And he's going to overturn their whole deductive argument. And it seems to me, in the meantime, our goal in life as followers of Christ is to keep ourselves available to new information, to new data in every facet of life. In every facet of life, including our understanding of the environment, our relationship with ecology, the ecological world. We come here today not to be confirmed in our biases, but to be challenged in them so that we can grow and adapt in life in a godly way. And we may find in the midst of it all that we come to a newer and deeper understanding that Jesus, who was dead, really is alive. And that even today he walks with those who call upon his name.